From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of May, 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting. We'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey and take up the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility. And we'll catch up with that report that I promised you yesterday from Daryl Good and Scott Irwin as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to stay with us if you can for the second half hour of the program, or just visit willag.org for Commodity Week. Our program begins with a discussion of PEDV with Jim Lowe. He's a clinical veterinarian here at the University of Illinois. It's all part of the Agricultural Service from Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Well, in Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the soft red winter wheat, that'd be the July at 6:27 1/4, was down 5 1/4 for the day. September at 6:39 3/4, 4 3/4 lower. The hard red at 7:06 1/2, down 8 cents. And then in the July corn futures, actually that 7:06 1/2 was the spring. The hard red July at 7:23 was 7 1/2 lower. July corn futures at 4:65 3/4 were down 3 3/4. September at 4:58, down 5 1/4, and December corn, $4.57 1/2, 5 1/2 cents lower. The March at 4:66 1/2, down 6, and July at $4.79, down 5 3/4. July beans today, $14.93 1/4, 5 3/4 lower. August at $14.24 1/2, down 8 1/4. September soybeans at $12.85 3/4, down 10 3/4, and November at $12.33 3/4, 10 1/2 cents lower. January futures at 12:39 1/2 for 2015, down 10 1/2 cents. And the July contract there at 12:47 1/4, down 10 1/4. Meal was up $1.80, finished at $500.20. Oil at $38.50, down 91 cents. Live cattle futures in the August at $138.60, up 57 1/2 cents. The nearby June there at $137.80, down 22 1/2. Those August actually were lower. They were down 57 1/2. Like the feeder cattle as well, unchanged, 197 and a nickel. But the Septembers were up a nickel at 198.12 1/2. And lean hogs finished the June at 113.35, down 95 cents. This, of course, is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the afternoon trading the July contract at $102.73 a barrel, down 85 cents. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $2.99 6/10, that's a penny and 7/10 lower. Ethanol futures at $2.36 1/2, down 2 cents, and the spread between the two is 63 1/10 cents wide. That's just about unchanged from yesterday. Natural gas at $4.54 6/10, down a penny and 3/10 for the day, and diesel fuel at $2.88 4/10, 3 4/10 on its last tick. Gold futures at $12.45 5.80, down $11, and the U.S. dollar trading at 80.36. That's currently down 0.13 on the delayed tick. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high near 85 degrees on an east wind. That'll come at about 10 miles an hour. Mostly clear, low of 60 degrees to this evening. East winds at 7 to 9. And Saturday, sunny skies. Another beautiful day, a high of 84 with an east-southeast wind at 7 to 9 miles an hour. Saturday night, mostly clear at a low of 63. Again, an east-southeast wind at about 9 miles an hour. Sunday, partly sunny skies and 85 degrees. A south wind at just 9 miles an hour. And Sunday night, 40% chance of showers. A few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy. A low of 69. On Monday, showers and thunderstorms will be likely, mostly cloudy at 84. Rainfall set now at 60%. That will carry into Monday evening and then dissipate, mostly cloudy then with a 68-degree low. Tuesday, chance of showers and thunderstorms come back, partly sunny otherwise at 84. Again, more showers and thunderstorms possible on Tuesday evening, mostly cloudy and 65. That will carry into Wednesday with a 82-degree high. And it will be partly sunny. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel at the Prairie Research Institute here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of May, 2014. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us, Mike Zuzulow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It was a busy day here. I bet you were there, too.
Very busy day, very busy month, too, Todd, and that was a really busy month in the wheat market, down 13% on the month in soft red wheat. That's the biggest monthly loss in 2 years. So you're sitting here saying, how in the world did the corn go lower, even though we got caught up on planting progress this past week? And I think you got to put the majority of the reason at the feet of the wheat market after that kind of a month.
Yeah, so on the monthly, it was down what? It posted an outside down. It was down 92 cents. That was a long drop.
Ugly drop. And I did some research because I've heard a lot from the trade about how good the soft red wheat is. And in fact, Reuters put out a news report last night about southern Illinois early crop yield trials and test plots looking, you know, 10 to 15% better than last year. And I went ahead and looked at the very poor and poor conditions for the, you know, four of the top states in soft red wheat, four of the top states in hard red wheat. And for very poor and poor conditions, all four of the soft red wheat states are higher in very poor and poor combined. And two of the four in hard red are higher in a worse shape or worse condition than last year at this time. So I think the perception in the wheat market about the crop potential in soft red, the market sentiment and perception about El Nino bringing in a much bigger food grain and feed grain supply this coming year, and in the market perception about Central Europe and the Baltic states calming down geopolitically, all had their day and really gave the bear the strength of the month of May.
So I have a note here, and let's see, I think this is on the soft red, that they, on the monthly, did it gap lower as well?
It may have. I haven't looked at the monthly chart. I was looking at the weekly and the daily charts before we went on the air, but it may have, because I do think there's a little bit of a little flat gap, so to speak, where it's not much difference between the previous month's low.
Oh, you know what? That is not the monthly. That is the weekly.
I
just pulled it up because I was looking at it and thinking, no, that's not right.
The weekly chart has one in it for sure, but that's, there is a little flat gap there in the weekly chart, and there's still a gap down below the market. I think I want to say it's around 630, if I remember right. I'm not looking at the chart right now, but there's a gap above the market and below the market. So, like we talked about this morning, it seems like wheat looks like 2010, where I think we could expect, if these crop conditions end up being correct and accurate, we could expect maybe a weekly low or a major seasonal low by the second week of June, like we did in 2010 for the soft red wheat.
So that would be good news, because it would come, which would be a little bit unusual, as most of the guys are finishing harvest or in the midst of their harvest for soft red winter wheat here in our part of the world.
Yeah, just starting is exactly right. A lot of guys really try and wait till the end of June to get it dried down and get it as quality protein as possible. I think this is where it goes back to the corn market, and if we could get a low in the wheat market. I found it very odd for the corn market in the December contract falling over 8% since the end of March as of today's close, because today's the end of May, obviously. And that puts us within 25 cents now of the January 10th low, that major low back around 435. Well, if you look at the carryover level since January 10th, USDA's dropped the carryover in corn by 485 million bushels. That's a 30% decline since January in the last three reports. And I think this is where the cash market's really starting to show a little bit more life as we got into the end of this week. And so I think the corn market is ready for a test to the upside, or at least a retracement to the upside once the wheat market gets done going down.
And nonetheless, it wasn't able to hold, at least on the new crop December contract. The 463 area is above 460. It's right at, 465 and three quarters in the July. So it's got to hold this place.
You're right, because what happened this week was we went below the 200-day moving average in July, and then we went up and tested it and failed and told the market, we're confirming this as the new resistance level. So you've got a limited amount of time. It's kind of like a time bomb with those technicals. You've probably got a limited number of days, maybe the beginning of this week or through the middle of next week, I should say, that you would get a retest of that 472.5 200-day moving average. You get above it, no harm done. But if you stay below it for, you know, several trading days in a row, the trade may start to ramp up for another leg down, much like they did in the wheat.
Okay, so the ratio, you talk about this, the corn-soybean ratio quite a bit. It changed at the end of the May, and it says more beans, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think that the producers in the Northwestern Belt followed that advice?
You know, you bring up a huge point because I have a hard time thinking that North Dakota was able to plant 50% of its corn in 1 week. And if it did, those got to be some pretty ugly-looking fields. If you were running that hard and putting 50% of your fields, that or you don't have any acres up there to begin with. But be that as it may, the USDA planting progress report would say you're not going to see many more bean acres, especially out of corn or spring wheat. But I just got off the phone 5 minutes before you called with a very a loyal listener to Will Radio from central Illinois, not far from Shelbyville, southern area, maybe from the central part. And he was talking about driving from Shelbyville up to Rockford and how many bigger bean acres as far as number of fields side by side that he saw around the La Salle, Peru area. And I'll have to say Roger Ward told me the exact same thing when I talked to him over in Jacksonville this morning. So this brings up the issue, has the market been able to entice the producer to plant more beans? And I guess it's there in some respects, but the anecdotal evidence from my clients for as a whole from both sides of the Mississippi River would say, no, the corn went in really well. They got their areas in time before the rains came. Except for maybe the northern parts of Illinois and Indiana.
Hey, did Roger, and for those who don't know him, Roger is a farm broadcaster based in Jacksonville, and you talk to him on Fridays on a regular basis, too. Did he talk very much to you about the dryness in his area? Because it is now set at abnormal, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He did talk about that, and that's where the 30-day outlook by most meteorologists is saying starting next week, you're going to get greenhouse conditions. You're going to get 2 inches of rain. You're going to be in the 80s. The month of June and most of the 30-day precip maps that I have been looking at from weather people is that you're going to have above normal precip in the month of June. And I got to tell you, Todd, you got to have it because with the way this crop went in, I think it needs a really good drink here in the early part of June or it's going to go backwards. And I really question, and maybe we can talk about this more on Commodity Week, but I really question whether we got a 165 national yield being grown out there right now.
We'll have to take that up and what it looks like. You know, do you feel better about the beans than you do about the corn?
Yeah, I think I do from a standpoint of the meal market. It held up super well given some of the negative fundamentals this week.
Yeah, I meant yield-wise.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant price-wise. No, in fact, I guess what I have heard, and this goes back to why they would probably be putting more corn acres in than bean acres, is a lot of the clients from Bloomington all the way up to Lake Michigan are really scratching their head about their bean stands right now and their emergence especially. And so that seemed to be an area, a strip that got a lot of extra rain. And so I don't think the yields are that great in the beans yet either. And I really wonder how USDA is going to act at the end of June. Now, this is where your hedging mindset really has to be very protected going into the June report because it's actually probably more uncertainty on the table than more certainty just because of this early weather pattern.
Hey, for the second week in a row, you started to mention meal, but it finished above $500.
It did, and that cash meal, I think, in the Midwest is going to stay in that price level, Todd, until we encourage enough beans or meal into this country because we're right there at 99%, or excuse me, 103% of total bean commitments compared to what we should be at this point in time, and we're only on week 38 of the marketing year.
All right. Well, we'll talk with you again during Commodity Week. Look forward to hearing what you have to say then.
Me too. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting. We'll be one of our panelists on Commodity Week this afternoon. You can hear it online at willag.org or on our home station immediately following this program. Mike will be there along with Aaron Curtis and Kurt Kimmel. Special guest, an interview I did earlier in the week with Jim Lowe. He's a clinical veterinarian here on the U of I campus. We talked a lot about PEDV, how it came to the United States, the impact that it has had, and what its impact might continue to be. Listen up for that one on Commodity Week. It's already posted as a video piece, by the way, at willag.org, so you can see it there, too. That's willag.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net. Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
In today's agricultural news, a couple of livestock-related stories. Hillshire Brands is at the center of a barnyard brawl. Tyson Foods, the largest U.S. meat processor, made a $6.2 billion offer for the maker of Jimmy Dean sausages and Ballpark hot dogs, topping a bid made 2 days earlier by rival poultry producer Pilgrim's Pride. Based in Greeley, Colorado, Pilgrim's Pride is owned by Brazil meat giant JBS. The takeover bids for Hillshire by the two major meat processors are being driven by the desirability of brand-named processed products like Jimmy Dean breakfast sandwiches. The convenience foods are more profitable than fresh meat, such as chicken breast, where there isn't as much wiggle room to pad prices. Selling more types of products also would give the companies a buffer from volatile price swings of fresh meat. When beef prices rise, for instance, and shoppers turn to other meats, the companies can sell more chicken or bacon. Well, during the first 2 weeks of June, the National Agricultural Statistics Service will survey U.S. producers and visit different pieces of farmland, that to collect information for its June Ag, Hogs and Pigs, and Area surveys. Here's NAS, National Operations Division Director Joe Persaki.
We go to farmers and ranchers across the country, and we go to pieces of land and observe what's going on a piece of land and talk to the farmers and operators of those pieces of land. There's about 11,000 of those pieces of land. And then the third survey that we're doing at the same time frame is our June Hog and Pig Survey, which goes to hog operators, and there's a sample of about 7,500 across the country on that one.
Prusaki says NAS collects data online, by telephone, mail, and personal interviews. He says farmers should respond to the surveys because it's an important opportunity to tell their stories.
Basically say, this is what we have going on our farms and ranches across the United States. Because early in this season, NAS did a intention survey for spring-planted crops. And that's what they thought they were going to be planting in the spring. Now, at this point in time, this is an opportunity to say, this is what I really have in the ground or I intend to put in the ground at this point in time.
The information collected from these surveys is used to provide the foundation for estimates in the upcoming growing year, according to Persaki. The June Hogs and Pigs report will be released at 3 p.m. Eastern on the 27th. The June Crop Acreage and Grain Stocks report will be released at noon Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Central Time, on the 30th day of June. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. On the topic, by the way, of USDA reports, at the end of the month, the grain stocks report is due out, and two University of Illinois ag economists have looked at the accuracy of those forecasts, especially for the ending stocks. We'll hear more in a moment. You may read the full report on the accuracy of USDA ending stocks for corn on the Farm Doc Daily website. The post is written by Daryl Good and Scott Irwin. In it, the two summarize the accuracy of WASD forecast of marketing year ending stocks of U.S. corn from 1990 to last year's harvest by marketing year. They also discuss the implications for the May 2014 WASD ending stocks estimates that was just released by USDA. Three main implications emerge. First, they report WASD ending stocks projections for U.S. corn across the forecasting cycle are basically unbiased, if having a slight tendency towards underestimation of the final number. Second, the first WASD estimate of the ending stocks for U.S. corn, always released in May before harvest, has a large potential range of errors. This is sensible since the ending stocks forecast at this early point in the forecasting cycle reflects both production and usage errors. Third, there is a clear tendency for the USDA to smooth the changes in projections of year-ending stocks later in the forecast cycle. Well, here's the bottom line part for the price of old crop corn. This tendency suggests the WASD ending stocks forecast for the 2013-14 marketing year, or the one we're now in, released earlier this month at 1.146 billion bushels to be left in the bin this fall, may be overestimated. Intriguingly, this is the reverse of the current market expectations that year-ending stocks for 13-14 will exceed the current USDA forecast. It's a price-positive change. Now, let's delve further into the report. Again, the 13-14 marketing year-ending stocks are now forecast at 1.146 billion bushels. Historical forecast errors suggest there is a 50% probability actual year-ending stocks will be between 1.21 and 1.26 billion bushels. There's been a slight bias towards underestimating year-ending stocks in this report in the past, with an average error of 49 million bushels. This bias seems to support the market's expectation that USDA has overestimated marketing year exports and therefore underestimated year-ending stocks. This last segment supports trade sentiment of a higher ending stocks number for corn, and this would put pressure on price to go lower. However, some previous University of Illinois analysis suggest errors in forecasting year-ending stocks late in the marketing year are more highly correlated with errors in forecast of feed and residual use. There is a positive relationship between the change in the ending stocks forecast in May and the error in the May forecast. If the May ending stocks number goes up, it's more likely to be associated with an even larger final ending stocks figure. The same is true if it goes down. If the April to May WASD ending stocks figure falls, then it is associated with an even smaller final ending stocks figure. While the fit's not great, the relationship is interesting, write Daryl Good and Scott Irwin. You may read their work on the FarmDoc Daily website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
This is the closing market report on a Friday afternoon. We always check in with the folks at the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility. Normally we talk with Ben Pruce. Andy Schaefer, though, is on the phone line there. He's their senior sales and merchandiser manager and joins us on this Friday. Good afternoon to you, Andy.
How are you doing, Todd?
Oh, I'm very, very well. Thanks for asking. Tell me about progress in the area. Is everybody all done planting soybeans now?
Sure is. We've been done, and I'd say we've been done about a week now, and all the corn is pretty much up, looking good. You could row it. You can pretty much row every cornfield out there. And the soybeans, we're starting to see the soybeans come up, especially with the 80 to 85 degree weather we've been seeing.
So I suspect the beans are popping pretty good as by comparison to here. If you were rowing a corn crop here, it'd be way behind, but I suppose that's all right in your area. And when you go further north, what do you hear from the producers there?
Well, when you say further north, you get up into that Minnesota area. They still are planting beans up there, and they're obviously winding down and having to make decisions about, you know, taking prevent plant or simply just not. Or simply getting it in the ground, and I think what we've seen over the past couple of years, if you get these beans in the ground, they'll typically grow. I mean, we've proved the last couple of years that it's tough to kill a soybean plant in some of these droughty conditions. So I think most of the time, guys want to get it planted.
And finally, do you have your bids handy for the day?
Yeah, we're 30 under on bases here at the facilities, and I think that's showing like a 430 cash. That's for old crop. New crop bids, we're 35 under and we're 422 cash. And new crop beans, old crop beans were 25 under, and that's a little better. That's a 1468 cash. New crop soybeans were 55 under, and that's 1179 cash.
Hey, thanks so much, Andy.
Thank you.
Andy Schaefer is a senior sales and merchandising manager. He joins us from the Everly, Iowa facility that belongs to the Andersons.
The mint julep became the signature drink at Churchill Downs in 1938. It was first served in a souvenir glass for 75 cents. On this day in agricultural history in 1783, the first daily American newspaper was published in Philadelphia, the Pennsylvania Evening Post.
By the way, the Declaration of Independence's first appearance in a newspaper was in that publication. In 1834, Nancy Johnson received the first U.S. patent for an ice cream freezer. The freezer had a revolving shaft with two curved wings to move the cream. The ice cream tub itself also turned. In 1864, Johann Bodmer died, a Swiss mechanic. He established a small factory in 1824 that made the process from carding to spinning wool continuous. The first of its kind machinery was widely adopted in England and the U.S. and is regarded as having revolutionized the industry. And in 1899, George Cook patented an automatic fishing device. The device featured a trip lever activated by tension on the fishing line, which would also ring an alarm gong and take up the line on a spring drive reel. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. Now, here's Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with a weekend update of the weather forecast.
The statewide average temperature for May in Illinois was 63.2 degrees and 0.5 degrees above average. This was the first warmer than average month for Illinois since October of last year. May was a little short on precipitation. The statewide average amount was 3.3 inches. That's 1.3 inches below average. The wettest areas in the state were in that northeast corner where the amounts were 1 to 2 inches above average. It was a little drier in western Illinois, between Interstates 72 and 74, which saw less than 2 inches of rain for the month. This area is now labeled abnormally dry by the U.S. Drought Monitor. The National Weather Service forecast indicated warm weekend, followed by some cooling by midweek. On Saturday, highs will be in the low to mid-80s. Overnight lows on Sunday in the low to mid-60s, warming up to the mid-80s by the afternoon. Both Monday and Tuesday will be warm with highs in the low to mid-80s. Wednesday and Thursday will be slightly cooler with highs in the 70s in the north and in the 80s in the south. Higher humidity levels will follow these warmer temperatures with dew points readings in the mid to upper 60s for the week. There are chances for rain on Sunday through Wednesday of the amount of 30 to 50%.
Our thanks to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, for his weekly update of the weather forecast. Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for the week. On the weekly trade, the overnight and day trade, July corn for the week had a high at $4.75, its low at $4.65. Settlement price there at $4.65¾ was down 12¼ cents on the week. On the month, the close was 53¼ cents lower than it was in the month of April. December corn, 57½ cents lower for the week, down 17¾. The monthly trade down 51¾ in December corn. Soybeans had a high this week of 15.15½, a low at 14.82¾. The settlement price there at $14.93¼, down 22¼ cents for the week, 19½ cents lower. On the month, November beans, $12.33¾, the weekly trade down Friday to Friday, 32 cents, 13 cents lower in the November beans, or new crop for the month. And July bean meal, $500.20 was the settlement price. That was up $6.50 from last Friday. July bean oil at $38.50 was down $3.61. Soft red winter wheat July contract gapped lower for the month. It finished down 92 cents, $6.29½. That's the settlement price. The weekly trade there was down 23. The hard red July at 7.06 finished 19½ cents lower. It also posted a monthly outside down for both the soft red and the hard red, by the way. The hard red finished 62 cents lower than it did in April. August feeder cattle at $197 and a nickel were up $4.20. They gapped higher for the month, up $9.57½ in May. August live cattle at 138.60, a weekly trade $1.47.5 higher, and on the monthly charts up $2.52.5. Lean hogs in the July at $120.47.5 on the settlement price, down $3.25 from the previous Friday, and down $1.92.5 for the month of May.